Welcome to the Fearless Podcast. In a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. All right, y'all, welcome back to the Fearless Podcast. We are at episode 17, and we really appreciate our subscribers and our listeners. And for any of you that follow us on YouTube, we were doing a live stream updating everybody on the homestead and the web store, and we started getting some weird, goofy comments, and we were talking about the Maui fires and different things. We started getting these bizarre kind of queer comments that were peculiar and unusual. So I put the word out. This is like the third time I've mentioned it on the podcast, I think three times. And one of our subscribers, James from Louisiana, shot me an email and he said, "Hey, y'all have to talk to Samantha Starkey." And Samantha and her husband, they have a YouTube channel called Starkey Farmstead, and they are just across the border here in Louisiana. When I say across the border and you live in Texas, most people think I'm referring to Mexico, but I'm referring to Louisiana, and they're just across the border, a stone's throw from here. And Samantha has been boots on the ground in Maui. And so I thought, what a better person to talk to than Samantha, who's kind of been there, done that. She's talked to the folks in Maui so we can get some real time information. Because what I kept trying to find, everything, all the information was conflicting. And there was a lot of really confusing stuff. The one thing I knew was that the overall blue check mark narrative and the government narrative and the government talking points were completely and utterly false. And then these other weird, you know, there was these different intersecting things. Like, for example, there's a very popular podcast called the Sean Ryan Podcast. And these government whistleblowers have been, they've been dropping these government whistleblowers, and they've been, these whistleblowers have been putting out kind of spurious information about how these spec ops guy, they're using kind of high tech alien tech to abduct children. And this came up on the Sean Ryan Podcast. One of these Mirage men, I think they're Mirage men, that he's dropping this intel about, hey, when there are earthquakes and tsunamis, you know, these black spec ops, they go in with this high-tech aircraft and they abduct these people to traffic them, because, you know, that's when people go missing and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, man, that's pretty nefarious and high level stuff, you know? And so, okay, well, okay. So let's say that that's a possibility, but if that were true, you know, so I'm really excited to get a chance to talk to Samantha. Samantha, thank you so much for coming on the Fearless Podcast. Maybe what we should do is maybe you could introduce yourself, kind of give us a little bit of your background, and tell us how you ended up in Maui.
I can do that. Thank you. Well, it's an honor and a privilege to be here. We were chasing the truth, similar to what you and your family does. All right, it started, it's a long story, but it's very simple to tell. My husband, Stephen, and I own a 2-acre debt-free farmstead located in Southeast Louisiana. We educate people on farming with a regenerative twist, where we add in permaculture, we add in biochar, we do all of our own composting, our own worm castings, and we basically support our community through CSA boxes, which is community-supported agriculture. We work at our local farmers market. We work with LSU and Southern Agriculture on a regular basis. And we are in a 3-year scholarship program that is done through a farm up close to Ruston, Louisiana, called Campy Field of Dreams. So that started our farmstead, you know, journey 3 years ago. And we began YouTubing about 16 months ago to educate people on securing their food. You know, post-COVID, the prices went up, they never went down. And what I realized very quickly was that if I wanted clean food, if I wanted to feed my family clean food and secure food for my community, then I was going to have to do it myself. So I buckled down and I took my education, my 2 degrees in education, and I rolled them over into agriculture, and I just plowed into it. Well, lo and behold, I was like you, just innocently tripped over the story of Maui and children, and warning bells went off. Well, for a lot of people that don't understand the story, in 2005, Hurricane Katrina literally devastated our lower state. New Orleans was ravaged. It was a war zone. But what I do remember distinctly is watching close to 5,000 children be put on school buses and be escorted out of Orleans and parishes around them. And a parish is our county for you guys. And we watched all these children be moved out. They were already in the custody of the state. And we watched them get moved out of New Orleans. And within a couple of months, they had been misplaced. Well, that ensued all the way to 2020 when they, you know, the state of Louisiana claims they found the last lost child from Katrina. So, of course, when I heard school buses, children, Maui, being a native Louisiana, having lived through, you know, how incompetent a government can be in moving children, I began to do a little research and I became very concerned with what little information I could find. So we did a boots on the ground fundraiser and my amazing subscribers put together over $8,000. It came out to be about $8,900 in 6 days. We booked a plane ticket. We couldn't work it out for my husband to go with me. So I went solo. And I was very blessed. Shannon from Illinois met me there. He had worked for the federal government and was retired. He had spoke to my husband and he decided he would basically play chauffeur. So he drove me all over Maui and I interviewed hundreds of people. We GoPro'd the entire trip. I'll be putting that up on my channel over the next coming months. My number one question to be answered was, where are the children? Yeah. And I'm gonna be honest with you. As soon as I got off the plane and I got into the area that I was staying, which was 15 minutes out of Lahaina, I realized that there were no missing children posters. There was no outcry. Where are our children? Nobody was in the middle of the street screaming. There were no protests. There was no gossip. Because, you know, being from the South, I'm going to talk to everyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking to the people in they call them condos, but it was an Airbnb. It was a one-bedroom Airbnb. I'm talking to the people in the parking lot. I'm talking to the people that live in the neighborhood. I'm going to the emergency hubs. I donated time at Citizens Church, putting food boxes together. And the whole time I'm talking and I'm asking, where are these kids? And over, their response to me was, what kids? And I'm like, you guys lost 2,200 kids. They were taken during the fire. And over, I had the same response to that question. Our children are not missing. And I said, I'm so very confused. What do you mean your kids aren't missing? And everybody I spoke to said the same thing. We know where our children are. So that's about all they would say. Well, I stayed on Maui for 10 days. You get to day 5, I get an email from a gentleman that lives across in what they call up country. It's where you have to go up the mountain. It's about an hour, 15 minutes out of Lahaina. So I go and I sit down with him and I spend about 4 hours with his family. And what he tells me is that, you know, it's all just BS. And I said, but I don't understand. Like, did children die in the fire? And he said, of course they did, Sam. But we're proud people. And we're not going to go on national TV and cry about our children that passed in the fire. We are people that pick ourselves up and move into the future. And I was really, it touched my heart. I really feel like God led me to him because he made me such at peace. I finally could put the question to rest that these children simply were not missing. Now, I understand that the Department of Education, what started this, to my knowledge, was the Department of Education had incorrect numbers. So the first time that they reported, they said, oh, we're 3,003 students below what we were this time last year. So, of course, people are like, well, where are those students? Well, over the coming weeks, the Department of Education reached out, spoke to families, and were able to mark them off their list. Now, to my knowledge right now, they're down to about 49 families that they have yet to speak to, which in their opinion means that there's too many. It's such a small number of children in those 49 families that they feel like that if they put their names out, then they will be exposing people who are mourning their children to undue stress. So you do have children that passed in this fire that is not being reported by Governor Green's office. That is a fact. And it wasn't just Justin, the gentleman that I recorded and spoke to, that told me that. I had a police officer's mother call me and tell me stories of two infants that died in this fire that you won't find on any official roll of the death count. So there is a lot of mismanagement going on from the governor's office. And I lay this totally to blame at his feet.
Yeah.
But there's also a theory that I've begun to lean towards where it comes to the Department of Education's inability to clear up how many actual children are not properly identified yet in either homeschooling in a different school altogether, like in a different county or a different state altogether, or they're going to distance learn, or they're registered in a new school on Maui. And I'm going to be honest with you. I think the discrepancy comes from the fact that the Department of Education for Hawaii may have cooked their books. They may have claimed that there were more children present on the island,
right?
Actually, was.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Funding.
Yep. So what do you, so I know the official numbers. Well, they started out as like 95, and you know there was this large discrepancy of 1,100 or 1,200 under unaccounted for. The last I heard. What is the total loss of life? Are there any kind of official numbers or even any unofficial numbers to bring the two discrepancies back into balance?
Not to my knowledge. Okay, so one day you see Governor Green saying there's 115 accounted for deaths. The next week you see it drop below 100. And I'm like, well, wait a second. You know, you can't go down.
Right.
I will be honest. The morgue was full when I was on Maui. So if the local morgue is full, it's okay. So it's so hard to explain because it does get very in depth. But I did receive an email from a lady that works at one of the local emergency rooms on Maui. They don't really have a very large hospital there. It's a pretty small, you know. And what she informed me was that people were encouraged to call the FBI if you can't get in touch with a loved one. And what was happening were people were calling as a joke and putting people on that list that weren't, they were never on Maui, but they were just giving the FBI tons and tons of names. So the list grew to like 1,500 people that they were actively looking for. And this lady that works in the emergency room actually found out that her name had been put on that list twice as a joke from somebody else. And she said, I was nowhere near Lahaina. You know, I live on Maui, but I live on the other side. So how my name got on that list, I have no clue. So, I mean, we need to maybe give a little grace to the police as well as the FBI, because people have a very nasty sense of humor and they find it funny to put people on a missing list that were never on the island and weren't missing. So they're having to go through a lot just to identify who is actually in Lahaina and who would actually be considered missing.
And it always benefits them, you know, whenever, because here's the one thing that in my mind is absolutely certain with all the facts that we absolutely do know, the local, state, and federal government all played a major role in the death of these folks, okay, between roadblocks and local police following orders and redirecting and corralling citizens and not allowing them to exit and not sounding the sirens and all these different things. There was definitely a conspiracy of sorts between cutting off the water, all these, like, there's just these inordinate amount of facts. And then in addition to that, right, we have these spurious facts. And one of the, it was William Casey, right? He was the head of the CIA in 1981. And he said, we know that our disinfo, I forget the exact quote, but the quote is, we'll know that our disinformation program is working perfectly when the American public believe everything is false, you know? So we are, it is an info war, and we are dealing with, I believe that a lot of this disinfo, anytime there's an event where there are nefarious people acting nefariously in government exclusively, I affectionately refer to them as the District of Criminals. And so there are these nefarious people doing nefarious things. And when that happens, these peculiar, you know, people call the FBI, right, and give them all these spurious numbers. So this way, people that want to know the truth, we have to dig through this disinformation rubble, right? Which is why I think it's just so heroic what you did to actually go there, talk eyeball to people and see what the truth is. That way we can kind of wade through this to dispel, you know, social media is a very peculiar place. We love to put ourselves out there and interact and provide people with information and inspire and encourage and help people. It sounds like almost exclusively all the same things that you all are doing, right? And, but then when you're getting this weird, like, oh, don't worry about the kids, the white hats, they're all safe, you know? And you're just like, what are you talking? Like, people are supposedly missing their children. And if they're, it's bad enough. Okay, it's bad enough if their children are deceased, right? And literally turned into a pile of dust, which is a whole other story and another podcast for a different day, okay? And whether or not do weapons, I mean, there's all kind of, you know, there's all kind of very interesting stuff that happened. But it would be bad enough if your child was incinerated, right? But now there's supposedly some kind of counter narrative that these good Navy SEALs found these children in a storage container in cages and they rescued them.
Right.
Yeah. So, that would be terrible. What was that? I'm sorry. You broke up.
Sorry. So Honolulu, you know, is the big island. It's a completely different island. And that was something else that I found myself having to do for people, was provide a point of reference. So they had no perspective of what they were dealing with. So this is what I tried to show people. The road going in and out of Lahaina, there's only one main road, right? Mm-hmm. And about halfway down, you can cut up and go kind of up the mountain and see the city. Now, all of that had police and military blocking you off. And you couldn't even see the town of Lahaina when I was there, but just glimpses of the black burned areas. There was no way school buses during a fire could have picked up children on these little narrow roads and everybody not have seen it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Everybody would have seen it. And so then people tried what about the dock? They could have got them on boats. Well, I spoke to a few people that had boats out that day, and they were saving people from the water, and they could see the dock on fire. So again, not even feasible. And so my question, when they bring up, you know, they found children on the Honolulu, and I'm like, well, how did they get them there? You know, you're talking about an island, and it's the ocean around this island. It's not the Gulf of Mexico here, people.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
And so a lot of people don't have the point of reference, but you brought up the misinformation. So I think I remember telling you, I will never forget the day when I put up my very first video, Where Are the Children? And it went viral. Over 300,000 people have seen this video in 3.5 weeks. And I did not take it down, though I did turn off comments so that people could not feed each other, you know, the narrative that was wrong. I left it up to show people where my journey started so that they could walk through the whole playlist with the very first video and watch how my mind was educated and my eyes were opened to the truth. But one of the things that caught me as very odd was that I only had 4,400 subscribers at the time. Yet for some reason, the YouTube algorithm went crazy with that one video. And because of that, I ended up in Maui. Now I feel like God leads us everywhere we're supposed to go. And if we're willing to go and follow his calling, there's, you know, a nugget of truth at the end of it. And so I'm thankful for that. But I really feel like the stories about the missing children are what's being promoted. Who's it and why are they promoting it? And on Maui, I literally told my viewers, we're all looking left, but we need to be looking right. This is literally their way of keeping people from watching what the government was doing, because it is a land grab. Maui, exactly. And no one will ever convince me that was a wildfire. I traveled the island. I drove almost 1,000 miles in 10 days on an island that's not very big, you guys. And I spoke to hundreds of people, and people drove me in their personal vehicles in the upcountry area to show me all the different places that these fires started. You want to know what I noticed? There were no power lines in those areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Samantha, regarding the locals and your personal opinion from being there, and I realize it's obviously speculation, do you think that the fires could have easily been started covertly by whoever or whatever, but do you think that direct energy weapons were used?
I do. Yeah. And actually working with people who were on Maui right now, and we are starting to put together an interactive time map that's also geographically placed. So when people send us documents, like it has to be originals, pictures or videos from either upcountry or Lahaina, we feed it into the map. Excuse me. Ooh, and okay. Is we are literally starting to get a picture of how all these fires started, because a lot of people don't realize there wasn't one fire. There were 5 fires and 5 separate parts of the island that started on the 7th of August, and that part of Lahaina already had their power cut off before the main blaze took off. Now, here's the interesting thing. The fire trucks for Lahaina were in upcountry fighting the fire over an hour away upcountry up the mountain when the Lahaina blaze went insane. So imagine, you know, very few people to help, and they're stretched very thin, and they're in the wrong place, literally at the wrong time. So I have a lot of respect for the first responders, because of the mother that I spoke to, whose daughter saved over 30 people in her police cruiser. You know, she had worked 8 hours that day when the call came in that Lahaina was, guys, you cannot imagine. I mean, it looked like night. It was so dark with the smoke and the everything going on. And she had worked that area for 12 years as a beat cop prior to moving to another part of Maui. And on her own time, she went into that blaze and was able to save 30 people. But she also watched twice as many people literally burn to death in front of her. And she is now not working, you know, going through counseling. So we need in our prayers, because she's a real hero.
Yeah. And I think, like you were saying, the real story is the local and the state, the mayor, the governor, and the preemptive plans and plots that were already set in place to grab this land. And now to immediately, before these bodies even cool, let's look at all of the regulations that we can lift so that Vanguard and BlackRock can come in here and put in housing, one, to steal this ancestral land of these homesteaders. I mean, we all, you know, people in our channel, we desire to have dirt, grow stuff, and have a homestead. And these ancestral people that are literally like part of this dirt for centuries, they can trace it back in their family's heritage, and the government is just going to snatch it and steal it. And how all of us should be able to sympathize with that, relate to it in a sense, and want to support these people. And that's what makes these conspiratoria kind of like, oh yeah, black ops military with UFO technology swooped in these, you know, silent vehicles and absconded these kids and took them to some island in the Bahamas or whatever, you know, same thing. But, you know, and that's, and what does that do? That takes all of the focus and the emphasis off of the nefarious politicians that have been placed where they are, just like the chief of police who, prior, he was directly involved in the supposed mass shooting in Las Vegas, right? And now, so I just had Chris Emery on the podcast, and we were talking about Merrick Garland, right? And Merrick Garland was on the commission that investigated the Oklahoma City bombing, right? And since he did a good job covering that up, now, so many years later, that was what, 95? Yes. Now he's the attorney general, right? And so you get rewarded when you cover up and you play the game and you are actively involved in covering up the murder, the mass murder of American citizens, right? You get rewarded. And just like this guy from Las Vegas who magically ends up in Maui, right? And he's in the perfect place at the perfect time to help cover this whole thing up because he has experience, right? So you send your experienced guys to where they need to be.
Yeah, you do. And you have to remember too, he's also the coroner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, he's going to say whether or not that person died of smoke inhalation or fire. And that's a big difference, guys. And that's what a lot of people don't realize, is if this was some form of a due weapon or any form of intentional fire, you're going to have chemicals in the air that you may not would have had if it was just a regular fire. So now you've got people inhaling very toxic chemicals. And if he doesn't want to claim it, you know, as he wants to say it was a fire victim and go no further with it, there is nobody there to put a stop there, to slow him down. And that's a very, you know, it's so easy to be bought when there's nobody there to watch over your shoulder.
Yeah. And now all of these people, their property is being stolen. And it's not only is it being stolen, it's going to be reappropriated by transnational corporations. And these BlackRock, Blackstone, Vanguard, they're going to build this up. They're going to steal all this property. And it's going to, they've already have all the plans in for the smart city and the 15-minute city. And Hawaii has already pledged to be this 100% renewable, in air quotes, renewable energy. And what do you know? This happens and it just accelerates the plans. And this ancestral land that had complete prohibitions to it as far as building a new construction, now in the name of a safe and effective emergency, right? It's going to be safe and effective. And now we can just bulldoze this whole thing. And for the cause of worshiping Mother Earth and, you know, renewable energy and carbon footprint, we're going to bulldoze it and pave it like a parking lot, put up a bunch of solar panels, and we'll stack them, pack them, track them. You know, we'll have housing for everybody. It's going to be in like a 30-story high rise, but everybody will get their own little cube of reality, and everything will be at their 15-minute fingertips, you know, and we're watching this in real time.
We are. And something I think a lot of people don't realize was that in June is when Governor Green put out, I don't know what they call it. It's not a proclamation. He basically, I can't think of the right word. It'll come to me in a second. But, you know, he basically put in writing that said, okay, if it is a natural disaster, and anything happens, all the stops come out. So the land commission that consisted of local indigenous people to protect the land, to protect the heritage site, their word no longer comes to play with what Green does with this property. So the biggest thing for us at this point, if we really want to help Maui, is prove this wasn't a wildfire. If that can be proved, then he can't go any further, right? And then, you know, that was July that he passed that. June is when the Hawaiians won the Homestead Land Act, the lawsuit that they had had against the government for 24 years. They won. They won a $328 million settlement. It was supposed to start payments in September. I can't find anything proving that the state of Hawaii has started sending out that money to either the inheritors, because some people died on that list. And basically, you're right. The land in Lahaina was homestead land. It was land that was protected. If people could understand the amount of artifacts and historical, nostalgic feeling that people get from going to Lahaina, it is beyond a criminal act what Governor Green and the officials have done. And now we're seeing Congress play this game with the electric company, which is owned by BlackRock, and developers come in, which is Keller Williams, which is owned by BlackRock. But we're also seeing Alexander and Baldwin, which is the family that were the original plantation owners, coming into play now too. So this is something that has been going on for about 150 years now, getting close to 170 years on Maui alone with the land. And something I noticed, because I am a farmer, I toured farms while I was there. And what I noticed was driving up country, all along the road, what used to have, would have been pineapple farms. I'm sorry, you'll have to cut that out. I don't know. I have like a sinus drip. I apologize. But what I noticed driving up and down the roads was that what used to be, would have been pineapple farms, is now citrus farms. So you would see a little tag that would say orange, lime, mango. And I'm like, wow, that's a lot of acreage in citrus. So when I got to Justin's house, which is the gentleman that is an indigenous to Maui, and I sat down and he was telling me the history, I brought that up because he made the comment to me. He said, well, you know, we're on water rations. So for me to water my trees here, my garden, we have to use rain catchment system. And I said, but I saw acres and acres of citrus on the way up here. And he busted out laughing. He said, oh, we don't own that, Sam. Canada owns that. And I said, what are they going to do with it? Because surely they can't feed an entire island only citrus, you know? And he goes, it's for export. And I said, your most fertile agricultural land and are growing food to take off of an island that already has food insecurity. He goes, now you're starting to see. And I said, wow. So what we're hoping to do, our plan is we're going to start fundraising again tonight. We're going to set up a GoFundMe. We're going to go back to Maui. My husband's going with me. We are literally going to work with the local Lahaina Elementary School that started their school back up 1 week after the fire. You won't see that in the news. 1 week after the fire, they got their kids and they started traveling around Maui doing outdoor classrooms. And I want to bring them cash. That's what I want to do. I want to fundraise. I want to go there. I want to provide that money to them so they can purchase whatever they need for their children. That's what I'm trying to tell people. They aren't missing their kids. Like they legit have been back in school since 1 week after the fire. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to go back and we're going to try to help pay land taxes and insurance deductibles and cleanup calls for people who have homesteaded land in Lahaina that are at risk of losing their land for lack of funds to cover the cost of cleaning it or covering the taxes on it?
Well, if I could make a recommendation, we've used Give, Send, Go for some fundraising. Yeah, Give, Send, Go. And they're great to work with. And GoFundMe has some nefarious, you know, with the whole Canadian trucker thing, they blocked up fundage. Yeah. So I definitely recommend Give, Send, Go. And what we'll do is we'll make sure that we have all the links to your channel. And so I'm going to recommend, if y'all want to continue to follow the story, check out Samantha Starkey at Starkey Farmstead on YouTube. There will be a link in the show notes. This way you can watch this unfold. You can support them and what they're doing. It is absolutely Herculean, you know, between the raising of the funds and then putting them in real people's hands. We're going to bypass all this FEMA, who's been, you know, absolutely complacent and just wasting funds, and the Red Cross. These are just places for the District of Criminals and slush funds to pay people to, you know, stay at five-star resorts while farmers and homesteaders, you know, can't even drink clean water. And here you got just an average homesteader in Louisiana that's feels the call of God to go help these people, boots on the ground, hands and feet. And I just think it's incredible. I think it's awesome what y'all are doing. Please go subscribe over there so that you can continue to follow this whole story. And like I said, we'll put all the links down below. And then Samantha, once you get that funding up, we'll also probably link that on our community page and whatever. But I really want to thank you for what you and your husband are doing. And I know your pastor's involved and your church. And I think it's awesome because this is parallel society, parallel community, parallel economy. This is how we do it. We don't say, oh, government, come help us. Like, government, what are we going to do? You know, like, where's Barack Obama and all these things, right? No, it's like, okay, we work together and we network and we look eyeball to eyeball. I think it is just so wonderful. I thank you for sharing this information and desiring to know the truth and then jumping on a plane to find out, doing all the hard work. And then not only that, documenting it, right? To share it. That's more powerful than just going and getting the information yourself. We appreciate it. Thank you so much. We want to help create this awareness and let those people know that we absolutely support them. How infuriating, you know, put yourself in their shoes, right? The government's like, oh, how do we steal all this like super prime, you know, volcanic pedestal, like the most fertile soil on the planet. And these families that have had it for generation to generation, not only that, they went out of their way to put laws in place to continue to protect that land and then never let a good crisis go to waste, right? We have this convenient, well-packaged little crisis. And unfortunately, hundreds of people, men, women, and children died in the process. And this is a travesty. And somebody needs to be held accountable for this. And at a minimum, you know, these people should at least not have a job anymore at a minimum. But yeah, definitely go over to the Starkey Farmstead. I'm saying that right. Yeah. Starkey Farmstead. We'll put a link down below. Subscribe there. You can follow Samantha and her husband and see all the awesome work they do. Thank you. Oh, Samantha, aren't you and your husband going to be speaking? You guys are going to be speaking at a homestead event, correct?
Yes, sir. So we'll be speaking like a keynote speech for LSU this coming. It's October 7th. It's Saturday in Bossier City. That's Northeast Louisiana. And it's free to the public. Everybody's welcome. There's going to be about 30 or 40 different vendors from all over Louisiana with their different products. And it's basically to teach people how to homestead. So we just want people to have knowledge, like, you know, how do you set yourself up? Are you going to be a sole proprietorship or an LLC? And how do you become Louisiana certified? So having gone through that, my husband and I, we put together basically a 45-minute speech just to help you. You know, we're going to give you all the places to register and all the different sites that you need to go to so you don't spend months trying to do it by yourself.
That is great. So we'll put, I'll try to remember to put the information in that down below, and we're going to briefly pause for a word from our sponsor.
Would you like to establish a privatized banking system that will help you separate from the mainstream banks and get more control over your money? Join a growing community of families, business owners, pastors, and churches, yes, even churches, that are learning to establish and manage a privatized banking system and enjoy the safety of guaranteed tax-free growth perpetuated by the amazing power of uninterrupted compound interest. Don't wait for the next crash. Contact Private Family Banking. They are here to help fuel the future of the family and the church with multi-generational wealth building. See our contact information in the show notes below, or just email us at banking@privatefamilybanking.com.
And I'll put the link to Chuck's ebook down below as well. Hey, we appreciate all y'all for watching. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review on whatever pod catcher you're listening on, whether it's iTunes, Spotify. Please leave us a review and also interact with us. Thank you, James, for reaching out and putting us into contact with Samantha, like real information in real time with real people. And this is what's so awesome about the community and how we work together. Samantha, I want to thank you and your husband for what you're doing. Continue to fight the good fight of faith. We appreciate it. A ton of people really appreciate what you're doing. And thank you for desiring truth and seeking it. And we hope that y'all have a very blessed day. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right, y'all. So with that being said, one last recommendation. Stay fearless, my friends.